Hello, beloved PG podcast listener, James here. This is the podcast we talked about in last week's episode. I'm throwing it up as a bonus because, as I mentioned before, Matthew's microphone went wrong. It defaulted to the laptop mic, and as you can probably imagine, it's not a great quality sound. I've had to cut out a bunch of his replies, sometimes because it was completely unintelligible. The microphone's fault, not Matthew, I hasten to add. So here, in its slightly abridged form, is that slightly lower quality podcast. You've got it. We did record it. I'm sorry it went a bit wrong. Here it is anyway. Please enjoy. Welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Matthew Ford.
Hello.
Back in the flow of things this week. 2 weeks in a row.
I know. It's a new record.
I'm not sure it counts as a row if it's just two. That's just a line, a dot, and a line in between. So we need more.
We need much more.
We'll build back up again, don't you worry. It's going to be a busy old chap this week, because we're diving straight in with Stadia. Stadia is the thing. It's coming out in 4 days' time or so, and things have changed. So we're going to be covering what they're going to be launching when the release date comes, what they're not going to be launching, and all the other caveats they've included in their recent press releases. It feels a bit like they've put the pedal to the metal and gone for gas, and the thing's going... You know that bit in Empire where the Falcon's broken whenever they try and do that noise? It goes, choo, 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 choo.
I do.
We've got news about that. We've also got an upcoming Ni No Kuni game coming to iOS and Android. Very excited for The Artful Escape, a psychedelic platformer heading our way. Plus a whole bunch of new releases, including the likes of Battle Breakers, Rebel Racing, Overdox, Rocky Rampage, Wreck 'em Up, and more. But first, the news. November the 19th is the day that we expect to see Google Stadia going live to the world. We've talked about it on the podcast plenty, but if you're suddenly tuning in for no reason, this is Google's first foot into the full-on game streaming service. Track back maybe 10 years ago or so to the likes of OnLive, which came and went because it worked if you had an amazing internet connection, and if you had a normal one, it pretty much didn't, so it crashed and died and you couldn't stream games without terrible stuttering and low frame rates. You had Gaikai, I can't remember how it was pronounced, which was around the same time. That's the thing that morphed it into PS Now. So that's a service that, you know, you can get on PlayStation and it lets you stream a whole bunch of games. That's got quite a substantial library, 100 or so big games. Well, some of them are big anyway.
Yeah, it's expanded recently. They've added like the likes of God of War and stuff.
That's right, you've got God of War, you've got the original Red Dead, you've got Shadow of the Colossus, you've got a load of nice games over there. That's noteworthy because of what we're about to talk about. But the thing is, streaming games isn't a new thing. This has been around for a while and it's been in service at Sony's end for a long time. We know Project X Cloud is working on the same thing. Microsoft are currently trialing their launch with a few select people. So people are streaming, you know, Forza onto their mobile phones with that funny little clampy attachment that they stick on top of the controller.
It's coming to Xbox Game Pass now as well?
It is, yes. So you'll be able to get access to that immediately if you happen to have that downloaded. So, you know, this isn't a new thing. It is new for Google to wade into these waters. But again, caveats seem to be the name of the game. When it was originally announced way back, there was talk of this idea of like, we'll have loads of games, you might even have some exclusives, you'll be able to play it on any platform, any device, get it on your console, get it on your PC, get it on your mobile, get it on your iPad, wherever it is, it's unlocking all of the doors, removing all the boundaries. Now, they keep closing the doors and and drawing some new boundaries and then putting the key in a thing and you can't get it, no, not yet, no, we can't have that, and it's...
Troubling times, I feel like, for Stadia are ahead. I mean, they've announced 12 carefully chosen games, in their own words, to launch on day one. So that includes Assassin's Creed Odyssey, Destiny 2, The Collection, Guilt, which is the only exclusive. Just Dance 2020, Kine, I think that's how you pronounce that, Mortal Kombat 11, Red Dead 2, Thumper, Tomb Raider, The Trilogy. So that's Rise, Shadow, and the original.
That's right.
And Samurai Showdown. And for the most part, these, I mean, a lot of these are great games, but they're old games now, you know, in the world of video games where, you know, if it's not like a couple of months or anything, it is considered old.
Then it's yesterday's news, yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Which is sad, but also, yes, you're not wrong. And it's also not a huge lineup. 12 games isn't really a lot. There are a whole bunch of games that have been confirmed later this year. So they've got another 13 or so. And
14.
14, is it? Okay. So you got things like the recently kicked around town Ghost Recon Breakpoint, which people weren't into. Final Fantasy 15 is coming out. Metro Exodus, which is a legit good game. Rage 2. Wolfenstein Young Blood, which was, again, the less than stellar sequel to the excellent Wolfenstein games. It's just purely from a games lineup. It's not hugely exciting from our perspective because the good games that are on there I've already played.
Exactly. I think that's going to be the case for a lot of people. What are they going to play day one? I mean, what is actually exciting people to, you know, for when the equipment and the whole thing arrives? Like, what is the first thing I'm going to play? Because I think if you're an avid gamer, and most of these, if you wanted to play them, you will have done.
Yeah. And there's a lot of nonsense talked about, like, everything's got to have a killer app in order for it to succeed. And that's not necessarily true. And, you know, providing a foundation for excellent things to come later is important. But at the same time, it would be good to have one game, one new game, where people are like, oh, I can, even if I can't only play it on Stadia, even if it's not an exclusive, just something that will make me go, oh, I want to play that on this platform, maybe because I can get it and it'll be free and it'll be cheaper. In the same way that Game Pass, you know, Gears 5 launches and suddenly, immediately, if you're subscribed, you get to play the brand new game that if you don't have the pass, other people have to buy for 40 quid. There's a real incentive to be, oh, I'm glad I've got that service. That's good.
Yeah. Could you imagine if they had Star Wars, you know, just on launch? I mean, that'd be an incentive for a number of people.
Everyone would have a go. Everyone would, like, you know, before, even if they were going to go and buy the game anyway, they'd probably down, you know, get hooked up to this and give it a go, and they'd see a real spike at the beginning. As it is, there's not a great deal to bring you running over to the service. So you're left with the novelty of it. You're left with the idea that, okay, we're not here necessarily for playing a game we can't play anywhere else. We're just here to test the tech. We're here to see what we can do. I've got my Chromecast, or I've got my PC, or whatever it is. I've got my phone, and I'm going to dive in and see how this works. Which is another problem, because getting everything working on day one is going to be a bit tricky, it seems. So for the first thing, you can't play it on a regular Chromecast. You need a 4K Chromecast.
Yeah.
And then even saying that, your 4K Chromecast is not natively going to support it. It needs to be updated before it can. So they need to roll out a little firmware update in order for you to be able to play it in the first place. So that's a bit of a bummer. The whole playing it out of Chrome on your phone, as I understand it, that's not something you're going to be able to do off the bat either. The only phone you'll be able to do it with initially is a Pixel.
That's right. Yeah. It's only supported Pixels, I believe. Yeah.
So you won't be able to do that aspect of the whole, you know, new exciting experience, which for me is the most interesting part of it. Like, being able to stream a game onto your PC or onto your console, whilst interesting, is not new. Like I say, I've played through entire games on PS now. I've been streaming 5 years ago. I was doing that. So that in and itself isn't new. Having it working on my Google phone or my Xiaomi or my Apple phone or my iPad, that is interesting. And having it connected to, you know, controllers as well, very interesting.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot missing. That's the problem. It's so it was, just for clarity, it was all revealed in a Reddit AMA, so Ask Me Anything, with one of the lead producers, I believe. I read through most of it, and it's just, oh, it's like that, you know, that meme of the dog covered by fire, and he's this is fine.
Yeah.
It's just, oh. And at one point, the producer, I can't remember his name, but he was like, we'll hopefully have most of the Stadia delivered to people on launch day, but it obviously depends on traffic and stuff like that. Some people won't have it available, which is possibly understandable delivery. That's maybe out of their hands. But then he just goes, do you know what? I'll come deliver one directly to you guys. I'll on my way to work, I'll grab it and I'll bring it to one of you. And he's just like, oh, no. This doesn't sound like this has been planned great.
Yeah, so you've got the danger of a lot of the hardware. The hardware mostly being the controller, and sometimes they'll be sending you a Chromecast HD or something, a 4K rather. Yeah, there's lots of talk that people who pre-ordered ages ago won't actually get it delivered on day one, which is a bit of a kicker. The buddy passes, which is the thing that I think, is that the stuff that lets you hook up with other people? Is that the multiplayer business?
Well, no, that gives a friend a 3-month subscription. Which, yeah, it's not going to be available for a couple of weeks after. So again, not helping other people jump in and everything.
Nope.
The achievement system, which is a big deal for a good number of people, I'd say. You know, trophies are huge. Mm. Same with achievements for Xbox. You know, I know Nintendo hasn't do their own thing, but you know, for a group of people, that's a big deal. And then, as you say, like the Chromecast and everything, you know, I don't understand the Chromecast because it's just a hardware update. Apparently, yeah. That's the only difference. So it's like, just roll it out. Like,
just roll it out now rather than get people. It's like doing the pre-installs for console games and PC games when you download them. Just like, do it now so that everything's ready to go. But maybe it's not ready. Maybe they're going up to the wire. You've also got the thing where Destiny 2, because they've released the collection version of that, or they will be, launching with it. That's going to be a closed system. You can't play multiplayer, cross-platform or anything like that. That is just locked in to Stadia as well. So that's another thing where you're like, ugh. A real thing for me, and I know this is a bit niche, but PC won't support 4K, HDR or 5.1 sound at launch. That's rough.
Yeah, that's strange as well. Like,
PC can't support 4K?
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people be discussing, imagine if this launch was just considered as like early access. Like, it wasn't a full-on launch at this point, and they're just like, look, this is early access for us, we've got a few features missing, but this is our roadmap. I feel like...
people would be more sympathetic.
Yes, people would be more understanding. But to say it's a full-blown launch and to have these many features missing, I mean, it's just going to get ripped apart. I mean, could you imagine if, like, the PlayStation 5 or new Xbox, the Scorpion launches with missing features like this? I mean, it'd be destroyed.
It's an odd one. It is an odd one. And obviously, by the very nature of the platform, this is something that's going to be constantly updated because it doesn't rely on hardware so much. It's relying on streaming. It's relying on servers at their end. And so they can make the changes. And then, you know, if you're streaming it through your PC, you don't have to do anything different. You just open the Chrome tab or whatever. I'm sure there'll be an app. There must be an app, surely, that they'll have for Windows 10 or something, as well as just doing it through a browser.
I'm and not then, sure, you know, at this point.
Well, we'll see. But then you can notice the differences when you just, you know, log into it. Like, the Chromecast require the hardware update. Nothing else should. Going soft launch with it might have been the way to do, because people are going to be very cynical. And it sounds like, obviously, we're being quite down on it by listing all these problems. And we're just taking the temperature of the room, basically.
To put it in a positive light, I would say, I think people are understanding that. Is it going to be amazing on day one? Like, I sort of understand it's not, and I know that's not a great thing, but I'm sort of waiting for it next year, you know, when it's day and date with big releases and everything, and expecting it to be, you know, in a good condition. So, yeah, the early access does seem like it'd have been a smarter thing in hindsight, but...
We only need to look over at the launch of Disney Plus and everyone's huge complaints about the fact that the app wasn't working and it was just an endless buffer or sound with no video or all the rest of it. Because
it's not in the UK yet.
Not that we know. We're hearing second-hand reports because we can't even watch the damn thing. But these things, when you roll them out on launch day, there's going to be issues. And when something is an always online only service, you're going to have even more issues. The amount of overload they're going to experience is huge. So expect lots of people saying we can't even log in, can't do this, the game's running at, you know, 540p and stuttering and, you know, 2 frames a second. That's what it's going to be. I guarantee it. That doesn't mean that the whole thing's going to fall on its ass. This is laying the groundwork for something that they need to build and refine, and in the end probably will become the thing a lot of people use to play games. Not even necessarily Google themselves. They're trying to set themselves up as the guys to do it because they are so huge and because they have the infrastructure. But the fact is that people are going to be streaming games in the future. This is 100% going to be happening, just like the movies, just like the music. It's a case of who gets there first and does it most successfully. And it hasn't been like PS Now. I say it's been round, it's been running, it's been successful, but it's not been like everyone's switching to streaming, and it's not at the moment in PlayStation or Sony's interests to
do that. It's been ramping up just the last couple of months, really. They've started, they've realised, oh, they've gone, oh yeah, Stadia, oh yeah, xCloud, oh yeah, we better get into this. But just the thing with Google, is it just going to be too late for them, though? You know, is it on day one when reviews hit, if, you know, it's been torn apart, is the story already written when it comes to next year with sales and everything like that? Can Google recover?
See, I don't know, because with the PlayStation thing, like, I think Now was pretty ropey. Gaikai was kind of ropey near the beginning. A lot of people complaining that, you know, you couldn't get anything above 720p and it was all pixelated and all the rest of it. And I gave it a go and went, oh, it worked very well for me because I happened to have decent internet, so it wasn't a problem. And it's not like the service then folded after 2 years. It's still going. The lineup's actually pretty good. And it's only getting better, and I can see them. I'm pretty sure they're going to be ramping up to 1080 this year as well, finally. Mm. And with Project xCloud, they're all going to be doing it. It's just a race to see who gets the pivot. But the launch lineup's not great. I think they've shot themselves in the foot in a few ways here, and I think you're right. They should have gone. This is just a soft launch, but they sort of nailed their flag to the mast however many months ago by announcing the release date, and they can't really backpedal now, so they just have to keep downscaling it and say, no, it's fine, everything's fine, it's all good, it's two games and you can only play it, you have to go to a cinema and you have to plug into that one port in the cinema, and that's the only place you can play it.
I cannot wait for like a documentary in maybe like 5 years time, like behind the scenes ramping up to this launch, and you know, all the issues and like the features and everything, them getting the call about games being delayed, like Doom and everything like that. I think it'll be a fascinating watch.
The what went wrong of it. Well, if you haven't cancelled your pre-order, November the 19th is the day that it will go live. Get your Chromecast Ultras ready and just, you know, be patient with the faceless super corporation. So, what about actual games you can play on your phones and other things right now? Well, new releases come in a bit, but Ni No Kuni, lovely little JRPG done in the Studio Ghibli style. We've had the original game and a sequel have come out on consoles. Now we're going to be getting a mobile game. So Ni No Kuni Cross Worlds is the name. And apparently it's going a bit meta. So in the game, you play as a beta tester who's been invited to take part in Project N, which is a virtual reality world, which is a parallel universe of the world of Ni No Kuni.
That sounds amazing.
So it's your job to rebuild the world and save the queen. This is a hack and slasher, more so than the RPG of the original game. So you choose from five different character classes, apparently, witch, swordsman, rogue, engineer, destroyer, and then you wandering around doing the hackety and the slashy. There'll be PV quests, there'll be dungeons, lots of other MMO stuff going on. These games were insanely charming. I played a bunch of the first one. I will totally have a go on this one just to see how they've done the conversion and how it differs from the original. And also, the little character who's running around with the long nose and the bell on the end of it. I forget his name now. It's been a while. But that was some of the best localization in voice acting I've seen in a game, because they gave him a Welsh accent. And it's great. They do a genuinely really good job with it. And he was charming as hell. So I will be looking forward to this one. Apparently, it's iOS and Android. It's going to be coming out in Japan somewhere in the second half of 2020. That's the very tentative release date they've given it. But if it does well, of course, then we should get a nice release date in the West for that one as well. Also coming out in 2020, The Artful Escape is coming to Xbox One and Apple Arcade. And this one is, it's a platformer, but the angle is music. So you're taking control of this character who is clearly Bowie. Very, very Bowie. You've got a guitar. You're constantly changing costumes, and your costumes change with the world by the looks of it.
It's super psychedelic.
Yeah, it's proper proggy, and they're leaning into the whole 70s purple visuals of it all. And it looks pretty standard from the actual gameplay, i.e. you're just running left to right and, you know, doing some platforming. They describe it as the landscapes themselves are made of sound. and triggered by your movement, as if the world itself is an instrument.
Mm. It's a bit like, reminds me of Sayonara Wild Hearts, but from like a side perspective.
Yes. So I guess Sayonara is more 80s and 70s, but the same very like colourful, over-the-top visuals and your movements being synced up to music in some way. I don't think this is a rhythm action game, technically, but it's leaning into that. And the trailer's beautiful, looks like a lot of fun. It's another one that I want to do. Annapurna are the folks who are publishing and producing, and they're good. They're one of the good producers out there. So this is an Apple Arcade exclusive for the time being, as well as being available on Xbox One, of course. And again, we've got a 2020 release date for that, but not an actual number.
I'm so in for this, though. I can't wait to pick this up.
Any of these things that kind of mesh music and gameplay in a way that isn't just a straight... I mean, I like Guitar Hero and, you know, all the rest of it. I love my Beat Saber, but they are rhythm games. Mm. This is not that. This is going to be just... It's based on music, but it's a different kind of gameplay. And yeah, just pretty colours. Colours and motion and noise. Nice sounds. I just put them all in my face and ears. All of which feature in the new Sonic trailer, which I feel we're sort of contractually obliged to mention. I've seen the trailer. You've seen the trailer. This is the one that has appeared after the original trailer was roundly mocked by everybody online, and then they extended the release date of the movie to go and basically completely redesign the Sonic character for the movie. It's out there. What do you think?
I'm super happy with what they've done. I mean, I'm a huge Sonic fan. If you look at the comparisons between what he looks like now to what he did, it's like, how did you ever get to there? The director listened to the feedback. He went back. They delayed the film and everything. Now, we can only take their word for this, but they said no VFX artists were harmed in the making of this movie. Not only the look of Sonic, you know, he actually looks like Sonic, you know, the classic modern 3D version.
It does, yeah.
But the trailer, I've watched it several times now. The tone just feels so much better. It feels like Detective Pikachu, as opposed to, you know, the Gangster's Paradise original one we got that was all like quite cynical and everything. Like,
I like the fact that that original trailer will now live in infamy as a slice of what we could have had.
Yes.
And I'm slightly sad we're not getting that one. I'm very conflicted on this. I agree.
Hashtag release the Sonic Cup.
Yeah. I agree with you that obviously it looks better. It looks like Sonic now, and that's a good, you know, if you are a massive Sonic fan, then that's probably what you want to see. On the other hand, it does feel a little bit like the entire world turned around and cyberbullied a studio into doing what the fans want. And I'm never a big fan of that, because people are constantly going on about how, you know, big studios ruining everything, all these people in suits turning around and making all these decisions, and we just want to, you know, let creators do what they want to do. No, not like that! Like I said! And it's like, I don't know.
It is a difficult one, yeah, I do agree.
I'm one of these people who thinks the Mass Effect 3 backlash was really stupid and set a horribly dangerous precedent for communities becoming really toxic and demanding this and that and this from developers, and then at the same time going, no, but we want artistic statements and we want purity, and then when they give you that, they go, no, not like that, I don't like it, do it how I want it. And it's like, what? You can't have it both ways. If you didn't like it, don't get it. If you do like it, great.
You do have to commend the studio, though, on the other hand, like, for actually listening and going back and going, look, we made a mistake. This is clearly not what anybody wanted, like, with something that bizarre.
Because, again, it's like a product thing. Like, what they're doing there is they're listening because they've realised it might hurt their bottom line.
Yes, I mean, it's all down to money at the end of the day.
Yeah, that's why it's been done. It's because they're worried that, right, so it looks... The fan reaction has been so bad that fewer people might go and see the movie. We need it to make loads of money, so we're changing it to give the fans what they think they want. Mm. I'm not going to say that I don't think it looks better and more like Sonic. It blatantly does. It does. But I don't really like this fan-driven thing, because everyone who is a fan, everyone thinks they know the thing that they want. Everyone thinks they can direct a better movie than everybody. Everyone thinks they can write a better song. Well, that was rubbish. I could do that better. It's like, no, you couldn't. Don't with all of this. Now, our job as critics, inverted commas, is to look at stuff and assess products and say, well, this could have been done better. This could have been done worse. You know, I've said bad things about games and all the rest of it. I've said good things about games, and that's just my opinion. I've not knocked on the artist's door and petitioned for them to change it. I've not, like, added them into 1,000 tweets telling them how much I hate or love or whatever their game, because ultimately they're independent creators. They're doing the thing that they think was right. If it's worked, brilliant. They'll be successful. And if it's worked, they maybe won't be successful. It'll become this cult thing that gets acknowledged later. Who knows? But I don't like this like fans have a direct line to the creators to scream in their faces till they change the thing to make it look like the thing they want. I don't know. I think all of this is a little bit sets a dangerous precedent, makes me be uncomfortable.
No, there is a big difference between criticizing something and sending death threats to somebody for a character you don't like. You know what I mean? It's not depicted the way you want it. Or, you know, with Pokemon, which we'll come on to later. But what would be the alternative for this? Like, I'm not saying in any way how this was handled was correct. It'd be good to criticize stuff in a polite, positive way, and still they take that on board. But what would have been the alternative? The film came out, it was horrible, nobody enjoyed it, the studio didn't make money, and then it just goes down as another Super Mario Brothers film.
But I would have hate-watched that film so hard, and it would have been great, in the same way as I will be hate-watching Cats when it appears.
Oh my God.
Imagine 2 hours of that character wandering around, interacting with old Jim Carrey, doing his old... It would have been... a car crash of monumental proportions, and I guarantee you, much more interesting than the film we're going to get. The film that we're going to get is going to be milquetoast fan baiting. We don't dare put a foot wrong now because we're going to, did you not like that joke? We'll take that joke out. Oh, we'll put it back in. Oh, I don't know. Like, I just feel like it's going to be so sanitized now because they're just going to play it so unbelievably safe to make sure that the fans don't shout at them again.
No, that's fair. I don't expect the writing to be any better than what was shown in the original trailer by any stretch. You know, I was, as a big Sonic fan, when this came out, I was just expecting to go to this film, absolutely hate it, but maybe just, you know, be one of those films you do hate to love, as you say, just because it's that bad. But now they've changed it and everything. I'm sort of going into it going, well, it might be... okay, I might enjoy it in some respect, but I'm no way going to come away from it being like, that was an Oscar-worthy, one of the best films I've ever seen. That's never going to happen.
Ultimately, the whole thing's flawed because Sonic should never open his stupid blue mouth and talk. The moment he does that, everything's ruined. So,
and if he does, it should be Roger Craig Smith, the original voice of Sonic.
Original how? As in turned up in the cartoon or one of the first games?
Not the original, let me correct myself. Like he's done all the voicing of the Sonic in games since like 2007.
Okay. So it's him with the annoying squeaky ass voice.
Well, he's not doing it. That's what I mean. I wish he was. It's Ben Schwartz from like Parks and Recreations.
Oh, okay.
They needed a Hollywood name, unfortunately.
Well, I don't care. Out and about this week, we got a few Apple Arcade things, a few generic mobile-y things. Not much on the Switch front this week, but you already finished Luigi's Mansion 3 last week, didn't you?
I did, I finished the story and then I was just wrapping up little side missions and everything. Just like you can hoover up all the boos and you can have a nice little collection of them all and all the little different ghosts you can find. But yeah, it was cool. There's enough... for a couple more hours. I wouldn't say it's a game I want to complete 100%. You know, it's just the story. The story's fantastic. Just play it for the story and I think you'll have a great time.
Fair enough. All right then. Well, if you want to head over to mobile, you can get Battle Breakers, which has got its official launch. I'm pretty sure it's been soft launched for a bit as well. But it is a new game from Chair of the Infinity Blade series, which you can't even get anymore on the App Store, as I understand it. But that was the classic third-person swipe-with-your-finger combat game that was all very high graphics and Unreal Engine, and look what mobile can do about 10 years ago. 2010, I think it came out. This is a million miles away from that. Couldn't be further removed. So what we're talking about here is a elemental battler where you tap on tiles on a screen, gradually uncovering the room. So you've got a bunch of crystals. They appear on the ground, tap the crystal explodes. Perhaps nothing's under it, perhaps some coin or cash is under it, or perhaps a monster is under it. And then using your six or so characters at the bottom of the screen, you must do battle. They're all elemental, so it's a rock, paper, scissors. So, you know, fire works well against earth and earth against water. And blah, blah, blah. So you've seen it a thousand times before. Only this one's crossed, I guess, unlike the usual RPGs where you're lining up three against three and doing, you know, your elemental attacks. This one's crossed with that dungeon game where you go in and the room is just, you know, a tile-based grid and you're tapping to try and find the door to get out. And every time you tap, it might be nothing. It might be a key. It might be a monster. You've played a bit. I've played a bit. What do you think?
I enjoyed it. I mean, my favourite thing about it by far is how it's like a Saturday morning cartoon. You know, and it's got like its own theme song and everything, you know, the Battle Breakers. And then, it, yeah. You know, I like booting that up every time and everything. But maybe by time 20, I might be sick of this. But for the minute, it's cool. You know, it makes it stand out a bit. And interestingly, obviously being connected to Epic Games, known for Fortnite and everything. So we'll see where they go with it. But I do like, it is simple, but in a good way. I think there's enough to it, but I need to play a lot more before I properly decide whether I'm going to invest like another 20 hours or so.
Yeah, I was not that interested, I'm going to be honest. It's just, it's such a saturated genre. I don't feel like it was doing anything particularly new or exciting. And visuals are fine. It's doing that cartoony, as you think, Saturday morning cartoon style. That's fine. It's good, you know.
I think that's the thing that stands it apart, and maybe the only thing that stands it apart.
But it's just another one of these tappity-tappity, free-to-play. It started to get me to buy stuff, trying to get me to buy stuff fairly soon. It was a bit of a shrug from me. But it'll probably be well-supported, because, say, Chair, very good pedigree there, so maybe they'll roll out and improve things and all the rest of it. But no, I wasn't really taken. But that's free. You can get that right now, iPhone, Android, anywhere you get your games from. Now, Rebel Racing appeared. I can't remember if Rebel Racing is on available everywhere. I have a feeling like this is a... Is it Apple Arcade only, or is it... No, it's on Android. It's on Android. It is a short burst... officially licensed racer, where you've got loads of actual real cars. I started off and bought a, you know, GT40 Ford. And you are just doing the steering, auto acceleration, and they're very, very short little races. It's one of these real, like, start up, hit your nitro, go around a corner, finished. And then the usual trek of upgrading your car and every little bit of it and buying new vehicles with the cash and blah, 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 blah. Again, I've just played this game so many times, it feels like. The novelty of having the real cars, even that, you know, lots of games have official licensing now, your CSR Racings and all the rest of them. So the races are too short, I want to play a full race, these are just these little snapshot bits. It also starts off very, very slow. After about like 4 or 5 races, it chucks you in a proper big supercar and lets you go fast for about 10 seconds. And that's your tease. That's your, like, hey, if you keep playing, you might be able to get to this one. And it was like, I spent more time in menus than I did doing any actual driving. And the driving itself didn't feel fast or particularly, you know, engaging. It's interesting graphical style because it's almost doing photorealistic. It, you know, the cars all look very real. But there's a tiny hint of that, like, cel-shaded style, like, going on in the backgrounds and the environments. And it was an odd little mixture. Strange clash. But again, it's just another one of these, I don't know. I was so unenthused, uninterested.
Just very generic.
Yeah, and I don't know why I would play this over any of the other races. It's not as fast or as exciting as anything like your, I don't know, Need for Speed games or anything, and it's not as serious and straight-edged as something like a Real Racing 3 or something like that. So, I don't know, it falls between two places and neither of them particularly interest me. But maybe, if you're a petrol head and you've exhausted, squeezed every bit of life you can from your other games, this might be for you. Rebel Racing is the name of it. You get that right now on all the platforms. Going for the Apple Arcade for a moment, this is the interesting game for me. So this, I was going to talk about it last week, but I forgot because we had loads of stuff to cover and it was already an hour long. So Mosaic, have you seen or heard about this?
Is it like a booklet?
No.
No.
So, Mosaic is, and I'm not even, I've maybe played it for about 3/4 of an hour or something. And it is, don't even know what it is. Like, you start off in bed, okay? You wake up in bed, and it's a very, very stylized, dark tones, purpley-looking thing, and you're just given this tableau of a guy lying under the covers next to a window, and you're not told to do anything, so you tap and poke, and nothing happens. Then you kind of drag your finger across, and it brings him up out of the bed like he's Dracula coming out of a coffin. And then you can drag your finger around the screen to control them. And this is all done in a sort of fixed camera rotating around. And then you move to another room and it goes to another camera, or the camera tracks with you. And you're a very tall and gangly looking character. And you go into the bathroom and approach the mirror, and it gives you three options of like fix your hair, straighten your tie because you slept in your clothes, do your teeth. And you just do them. He fixes his hair. He does it. He straightens his tie and he does his teeth, and he bends down to sort of spit into the basin. And then he goes to stand up, and then he stands up in such incredible slow motion. And there's this music cue that goes with it. You know when you take songs and they do that thing where it's been slowed down 800%?
Yeah.
It's like that. And I was like, oh, the game crashed. And then you realize, no, it was doing it on purpose. And that sort of sets the tone for what you're dealing with. And it is giving you this feeling of what it's like to do a kind of miserable grinding 9 to 5. It's very dystopian. Your phone beeps and you open it up and it's a message from your work saying that if you're late again, then you're going to be, you know, shit canned from your job, and that you are, you know, 7% less productive than other members of staff, according to a recent survey. And you go into the hallway and you walk down long corridors, but you go to the window. And then suddenly this little kind of coloured ball appears above your head, like flaring a bunch of colours, and everything blooms out. And then there's a shot of you kind of like floating in water, just completely disconnected with a sort of shaft of light, and you can sort of swim up, then it kind of cuts, and then suddenly you're back in bed again. And you get up and you go through the same process, the same rigmarole, and nothing much seems to have changed. And then you go out again and go to the window, but this time nothing happens. So you go over to the lift and go down and you head towards the job. And it is just giving you this sense of grind and miserable. And it really feels like a mental health depression thing.
Yeah, it does look very depressing.
That's what it's trying to capture. But then there are these odd little flights of fancy where you come out of work one time and instead of following everyone else to the right of the screen, you go left and you wander over there, and the sun looks like it's coming up, and there's a little cat by a tree and it wanders through the fence, and you can't kind of get through the fence to where the cat is, but it's mewing on the other side. It looks sunny and lovely over there, but you can't quite reach it. And then the weird twist comes when you wake up one morning, do the whole thing, and look down in your basin, and there's something in your basin and it's talking to you. That's, I don't want to spoil what it is, that's the place where the game starts to change a bit.
And it sounds very terrifying.
Well, yeah, it's not horror. It isn't. It doesn't feel like that. It's more just surreal. It's got a sort of woozy feel to it, which is very much my jam. And I like it because I don't know where it's going.
Did you play it in the dark, though?
No. I was just playing it in the afternoon.
That's what I mean. It might be quite scary if you play it in dark.
It's not scary. It's fine. But it's just unusual, and it's doing what I really like games to do, which is evoke a mood, a tone. It really has an atmosphere to it. Even just playing on a little mobile screen, I'm getting a real sense of place from it. And I don't know where it's going, or even, you know, kind of what it is. And I love stuff like that, because it just, you know, it makes me want to play more, to see what the hell is going on and what it's doing. Don't expect, like, gameplay mechanics. This isn't Space Invaders. You're not shooting the man. But if you're up for just like exploration and weird narrative and surreal stuff, this is worth looking into. If you've already got Apple Arcade, that's the only way you can play it. So there's no harm in not downloading it and giving it a go. But Mosaic is the name of that one.
Does sound cool. How long did it take you to beat?
I haven't beaten it yet. I'm only about an hour in.
Okay, cool.
I don't know how long it is, but I'm playing the rest of it because it looks cool and interesting. Now, there was something Pokemon-y going on this week. The new Pokemon game has come out.
Something Pokemon-y.
Look, I'm not into your Pokemons, okay? So, just how many of them are there now? 800?
Yeah, I think so.
800, is it?
I think over 800 now. I think it's 820-something, maybe.
See, all I saw on this was the discourse surrounding it.
Oh, yes.
I've been seeing people bitching online, as they all want to do. What's everyone complaining about, Matt?
Yeah. So, the biggest thing was, it's been going on for months it's to do with the national decks.
All right.
And how Pokemon Sword and Shield, which releases today, on Friday, 15th November, will not have the full Pokedex. Basically, you won't be able to catch every Pokemon, so all 800.
Okay.
Just the first time, it's never been available. Basically, you transfer them. You've got a thing called Pokemon Bank.
Yeah, I've heard about this.
Which people pay for, I think it's yearly. I think it's a one-off fee yearly. And then you can store all your Pokemon from different games and transfer them across.
Right.
You cannot do that in this game. There is, I think there's about 300, I think there's 400 off the top of my head. So I think there's about 50%.
Okay.
In this one. And then people have been pretty outraged, to say the least. People have been having a look at Game Freak, every word they've said, dissecting everything, saying they lied about not using the same animations and everything like that.
Oh, that came up ages ago. That's such a disingenuous argument. Yeah. They're complaining that they're reusing assets. They're reusing animation cycles for the Pokemon.
Yeah.
And it's like, dude, there are 800, or, well, 400 in this case or whatever. But, like, it's another one of these things where, like, I don't think people understand game development. And I'm, like, despite having covered it for a lot of time, I haven't developed a game myself. And so I only have the over-the-shoulder research angle of what game development is, so I have an understanding of it. But until you actually sit down and try and make a game or produce a game or something like that, you do not have the whole picture.
Mm.
And everyone will argue that it's people being lazy, but so rarely, in my experience, has it been like just people being lazy. It's normally things going wrong and schedules getting massively compressed suddenly at the demands of outside influences. And the good example to look at that is Mass Effect Andromeda. There was a very good teardown by Kotaku a while back on what went wrong. And then you realize that it's like, this game has been in development for 4 years. Like, what the hell happened? Mm-hmm. And then you realize that, no, actually, the game that you saw, the game that was released and played, was actually pretty much developed in less than a year.
Yeah, because of cancel and then start
and then 3 years of that was a completely different game concept that didn't work out and changing engines. And so there's always this, you know, a crazy amount of stuff going on behind the scenes. I understand people want their money's worth and everything, but come on. He does the same little jump when you select him and you're going to freak out? Come on.
But yeah, so reviews have been out since yesterday. And by and large, they've been very, very positive.
Cool.
With many people actually saying it's the best Pokemon yet.
This is Sword and Shield, right?
This is Sword and Shield, yeah. The one based on Britain, which is called. So it's the Galar region.
Okay.
So if that makes anything clearer to you.
No.
But, you know, I'm excited to pick it up. I'm not going to pick it up immediately, to be honest. There's a lot of games out at the moment, and it isn't interesting me as much as previous games in the series. But I definitely intend to play it over the Christmas period, if not sooner, hopefully, to speak on here, if not. But I think it's just the big discontent. And there's a big hashtag going around. I don't know if you saw that. It said, thank you, Game Freak, which was obviously the community thanking the developers, Game Freak, for all the work they've put in over the years. You know, Pokemon's one of the biggest franchises on the planet. First game I ever played was Pokemon Blue that I do put down to what made me fall in love with video games. And then following that, hashtag Game Freak Collide all began.
Wow.
So it's been a very mixed week, and it's a lot of horrendous words have been said online. And it's the same thing with the Sonic thing. It's just not the right way to go about the situation. It's fair to criticize stuff, but this is taking it to a whole new level.
So what was the developer's reasoning for why there are fewer Pokemon? Did they give an explanation, or did they just say, hey, it's going to have less Pokemon, and then that was it, and everyone freaked out?
I think they've just said it's got too many Pokemon. You know, obviously there's over 800 and everything.
Too many Pokemon.
Yeah, I mean, there is the argument to be made that, you know, Pokemon does release every year. It's a yearly game.
Yeah.
They maybe could have delayed the game for another year to bring all the Pokemon in.
This is the Assassin's Creed thing, where, like, they're smashing one out every single year. Different teams are doing it. But it means that there's not a great deal of time to stop. Let's rebuild from scratch. Let's create an entirely new, you know, this or that. Often they're just like the same basic idea reskinned.
Mm. Which I do understand. I mean, I was hoping something more Breath of the Wild, because this is the first mainline Pokemon on a console, which is huge. You know,
yeah.
The franchise has been around 23 years. We've never had one. We had Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee last year, which was like a spin-off sort of thing, a remake of the original games.
Sure.
This is the first mainline game, and it just looks like the 3DS game brought across, which is not a bad thing by any stretch of the imagination, and there seems to be little bits added to it, but it's just not blowing me away as much as, you know, Skyward Sword went to Breath of the Wild. You know, that was a humongous leap.
I feel slightly outside it because I've never been a big Pokemon player and don't have a Switch, but I'm just now looking at all this Game Freak Live stuff.
It's shocking. Jesus,
this is wild. Mm. And it does speak to the same thing, this same kind of weird relationship that the fans and the consumers have with developers, and they feel like everyone should...
Is people feeling entitled?
Yeah, it's not a good look, folks. It looks bad. Don't shout and scream. If you don't like it, you can just go, oh. That's the thing, like, complaining or saying that, hey, I didn't like this for these reasons, that's totally cool. Everyone is entitled to like or dislike. But everyone seems to, like, mobilize these attack mobs and take it to just preposterous degrees. And all it does is it makes you look really bad. It's not helping.
It's not. Be better to one another.
Exactly. Be awesome to one another.
We all love video games at the end of the day.
Ah, they're all right, I suppose.
I mean, you think they're all right.
Yes, we do. That's the point. That's why we're here. We want to play good things. And I understand people getting frustrated with stuff that isn't as good. And to be clear, again, we review games and we say this game is bad for these reasons. Well, this game is good for these reasons. But we don't scream expletives at the poor people trying to develop them. Because no one, generally speaking, sets out to make a bad game. That's not how it works. Everyone goes with the best intentions, and then you hit problems, and it's how you manage those problems. The fact that anything good comes out at all is a miracle when you see the process. Same thing in most art, in fact. Same thing in movies. If a good movie actually comes out, it's an insane miracle that it managed to step over the 20,000 landmines and interferences that came between the idea and then finally it hitting the screen. So I'm glad it's getting decent reviews anyway.
And you'll be able to see our review, I imagine, on pocketgamer.com.
Yes, no doubt. So go and check that out, along with coverage of all the games we've talked about this week. We will put a pin in it right there, but thank you all for listening as always. Go and do all the things that I would usually ask you to do, liking, subscribing. I understand there are bells you can ring on YouTube. That's a thing now. Crack on with that. And do come back and join us again next week for more Pocket Gamer Chat. Thank you for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.